Good evening and welcome back to Sports Talk ATL. I am Chase Earle, joined by Alex Sword. We got a lot of Falcons talk for you today. We have some crazy QB rankings that we're going to get in. Desmond Ridder, a little higher than most people expect from those people over at the 33rd team. And plus, they have guys like Tua and Brock Purdy, not even in the top 15 quarterbacks. We're going to discuss that at length. We're going to talk about Brandon Ayuk. There's some trouble brewing in paradise as the San Francisco 49ers lose in the Super Bowl for the second time in 4 years. But we're going to start off with the Falcons. And as the NFL free agency and the NFL draft approach, trust me, they'll be here in no time. What are the biggest needs outside of quarterback? Obviously, we've talked about quarterback at length. That's the number one biggest need. It has to get fixed. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But outside of quarterback, Alex, what are the biggest needs for the Falcons in your mind?
Funny enough, the most premium positions, or what, you know, most people would consider the most important positions, all need to be addressed this offseason for the Falcons. Obviously, none of them are as pressing as quarterback. I mean, that goes without saying. No, we don't have to even talk about that. But wide receiver, Drake London needs a running mate. AJ Terrell, cornerback, AJ Terrell needs a running mate. And then edge rusher, Arnold Ebikete needs a running mate. And then if you wanted to take it even a step further, the interior defensive line could use some depth. And the offensive line, particularly the tackles, could use some depth. If you told me you wanted to get a starting caliber tackle in there, I also wouldn't argue with you. So if you want to talk about, you know, the needs, four of the five, what most people would consider the most important positions in sport: pass catcher, somebody who can rush the passer, somebody who can defend the pass, and somebody who can protect the passer, are all needs for the Falcons.
Yeah, I mean, the Falcons roster was improved last season, but a lot of those were one-year deals like Calais Campbell and Bud Dupree. So obviously the edge rusher, we talked about Calais Campbell potentially returning. That would be a huge deal, but you need multiple bodies at that position. Obviously wide receiver, not even just wide receiver two, wide receiver three, four, five. After Drake London, I think there's only one Atlanta Falcons wide receiver under contract, so they need multiple bodies there. There's really not any position on the roster, as you said, that doesn't need, not just the main position. I mean, go look at safety. Yeah. I mean, is DeMarco Helms the answer? I mean, this guy was a seventh round pick. Yes, he played well for a seventh round pick. He's probably best served as a backup. Richie Grant has obviously really struggled. Doesn't look like he's in the long-term plans for the Falcons. They definitely need another quarterback. Defensive line, there's really not a position where I'm like, yeah, they're 100%. And you could say this about a lot of teams.
Yeah.
There's never going to be a perfect roster. I mean, just look at the Kansas City Chiefs. They had holes all over the place. Obviously, they won the championship, but there's going to be holes on every roster. It's just about filling the biggest ones.
Yeah, I think that a big talking point has been the fact that it's a good roster. It's not a great roster. It can be improved in the areas that we talked about. Now, where you rank those roster needs is very subjective. I would argue that cornerback might be a little bit further down than, say, something like edge rusher and wide receiver for a couple of reasons. First of all, edge rusher is the second most valuable position in the sport. And if you want to talk about something the Falcons haven't had since, you know, I've been alive, other than John Abraham, it is that dominant double-digit sack guy that you every single season you can expect him to give you double-digit sacks. I would argue that's more pressing than a cornerback, because you do have somebody like Clark Phillips, though, fifth-round pick. He did come along strong to end the year. Typical rookie struggles, but I think that that can be quashed. D. Alford, Mike Hughes, Clark Phillips. Obviously, you'd like another starter in there opposite A.J. Terrell, but, you know, wide receiver and edge rusher are two of the most important to me, and I just explained edge rusher. Obviously, wide receiver, Chase said, there's virtually nobody on the roster. I'm not talking about, like, guys we don't really know. Like, literally, there's nobody under contract with legitimate NFL experience. And Zach Robinson, as we know, values a lot of 11 personnel, which is three wide receiver sets. So, as Chase said, it's not like we just need one wide receiver. We need three, four, you know, multiple wide receivers.
Yeah, and we're not the Kansas City Chiefs. I know a lot of people. I saw a lot of people being like, "Oh, the Chiefs won with basically no wide receivers. They had Rashee Rice. We don't have Patrick Mahomes, and we don't have Travis Kelce
or Andy Reid.
Well, I will say Kyle Pitts is a fantastic receiving wide receiver. Yeah. So yes, maybe you could almost include Kyle Pitts as maybe potentially that wide receiver too in a lot of sets. But regardless, they need to get multiple wide receivers. Because as you said with Zach Robinson, they're going to run a lot of three wide receiver sets. Yeah, there's just not really an area on this Falcons roster that's set in stone. I do agree with you a little bit on the secondary aspect, because Clark Phillips could potentially be that CB2. And if you get a guy like that, that was a fifth round pick as your starting corner, that's huge value. You also have a guy in Jesse Bates that covers up a lot of errors on the back end as that all pro safety that he was for the Falcons, one of the best defensive players in football. So there are some things about the secondary that you like that make it maybe not as pertinent. But as you like to say, Alex, the edge rushers and the secondary kind of work together. You know, whether they go with a dominant corner and they really want to lock up the secondary and use Clark Phillips as that nickel corner and have a dominant secondary with Jesse Bates, two guys, and AJ Terrell, and whoever they get in free agency, that's going to really help out the pass rush. Whether they just want to go all in on the pass rush, that's going to really help out guys like Clark Phillips, AJ Terrell, Jesse Bates, and whoever plays safety for the Falcons next season.
Yeah, I think that regardless of what you do, you have to address one in a serious manner, whether that, you know, considerable draft capital or considerable free agent dollars, that I'm talking cornerback or an edge rusher. But in today's NFL, I mean, if you don't have three starting caliber cornerbacks, you're already at an immediate disadvantage. Pretty much everybody's base defense nowadays, that's just the defense that, you know, you start with, is nickel personnel, which is five defensive backs, which would give you three cornerbacks. You know, sometimes it's three safeties instead, but most of the time it's three cornerbacks. So, you know, the Falcons, for all intents and purposes, I mean, you know, not only did Jeff Okuda lose his starting role to Clark Phillips, but D. Alford, actually, though he started very strong, lost his starting role in the nickel. So, you know, if Raheem Morris and Jimmy Lake don't necessarily see two starters out of that group, Mike Hughes, D. Alford, and Clark Phillips, then the Falcons really need two starting cornerbacks, though I imagine at least one of those guys that I just mentioned is going to step into a starting caliber role. But, like, regardless of which one they do, they have to invest in one of those positions heavily. Considering AJ Terrell's contract extension is coming up, you would think it would be edge rusher, especially with the free agent class that's coming up. It's one of the most loaded edge rusher classes, free agents wise, that I've seen, I can remember, in a very long time. I'm not just talking about like the elite guys. I'm just talking about like the breadth. There's depth. There's guys that you can get on cheaper one-year deals. There's guys who not a lot of people are talking about, like Josh Uche. He's from the Patriots. I mean, there's so many possibilities in the edge rusher class that I think that you would be foolish not to come away with at least a couple. And whether that's the draft and free agency or free agency, you got to do that, especially for the Falcons. I mean, how long have we been waiting, begging?
2004, I think, was the last time the Falcons finished top 10 in sacks. Yeah. 2004. And they happened to finish first that year. So that's the last time the Falcons have really had a decent pass rusher. They haven't had a premier pass rusher since John Abraham was roaming the field, and that was, what, 2007, 2008, those years. So, yeah, it's been quite a long time since the Falcons were relevant, and it's something that they did put an emphasis on last year, but they need to keep doubling down until they fix this, and that will really help that cornerbacks. And I believe in Clark Phillips. I'm very surprised with what happened with D. Alford later in the year. I thought he played, even when they benched him, I thought he was playing well. There was never a moment where I was like, D. Alford's not playing well. I mean, you go look – as late as week 11 and week 12, people were talking about him as one of the best nickel corners in the game. Right. All of a sudden, he's benched. I really have no idea what the reasoning for that was, and we'll see what his future's like. But the only two positions I can look at right now on this roster that I can say don't really need to be addressed, the interior of the offensive line, at least as far as starters go, and the linebacker position, because Caden Ellis was a stud, Nate Landman stepped up, and hopefully Troy Anderson will be healthy going into next year.
Yeah, and I saw some Falcons fans on Twitter talking about, you know, this was in response to, I don't remember what mock draft, but the mock draft had us taking Dallas Turner, edge rusher out of Alabama. And, you know, their thought process was, well, you know, we already have Arnold Ebiketie. Let's use that pick on like Malik Nabers or Odunze from Washington to kind of give Drake London a running mate. There's never been an NFL team that regretted taking another pass rusher in the history of football, or at least when it started going towards a passing style league, were they like, dang, we have too many pass rushers. So I do want to say it's just like pitching, baseball, you can never have too much pitching. I would say cornerbacks and pass rushers, you can never have too many of them. You know, and that's what's intriguing about the draft. We talked about it yesterday that, you know, the draft offers you know, if it goes quarterback, 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 like a lot of people expect, it's going to give the Falcons a chance to land a blue chip top five prospect. And most of them that are going to be available fill an immediate need. Not only could it potentially be the best player available, like Terry Fontenot likes to, you know, go about his draft process, but it's also going to fill an immediate need. I'm talking about a Dallas Turner pass rusher, a Malik Nabers, a pass catcher, a Terrion Arnold, a cornerback, a Joe Alt, that future left tackle stalwart. You know, we got to think a couple years down the line, Jake Matthews. There's a lot to be excited about. Yes, they have holes, but they have the means to address them.
Yeah, I mean, the draft, listen, Dallas Turner is an absolute stud. Yeah. I don't know if he's going to be the best player available, but yes, the Falcons are in the perfect position to take the best player available because every position that these top draft picks are fills a need, as you said. So I think that's definitely going to be the case. Coming up after the break, trouble in paradise in San Francisco. Brandon Ayuk already suggesting that he might want to get traded this offseason. Trouble in paradise. Brandon Ayuk's family, I think it was his best friend and his girlfriend, talked about the possibility of him leaving San Francisco this offseason, which makes a lot of sense. He is a all-pro receiver, which I knew Brandon Ayuk was having a good year. I did not realize he was a second team all-pro, had over 1,300 yards on 75 catches, almost 18 yards per catch. I mean, he was absolutely insane for the 49ers, which is crazy because I'm a guy that watches the NFL all the time, and I still think of Brandon Ayuk as like that second receiver to Debo behind George Kittle, obviously behind Christian McCaffrey. And then you go look at his stats. He wasn't necessarily utilized like that in the playoffs. And I think that's where his frustration is. I think most people would say he's like the third or fourth best weapon on this team. And he's really a wide receiver one last year of his deal. The 49ers, you go look at their cap sheet in 2024, you're talking about Debo Samuel now getting paid $30 million. George Kittle over $20 million. McCaffrey, $15 million. Trent Williams, $31 million. There's a lot of contracts that they have pushed back to make this run, and it's all going to come back to bite them. And then, of course, you got Brock Purdy coming up. They're not going to be able to pay all of these guys, and you wonder if this is a situation where they look at Brandon Ayuk and say, hey, we could get maybe, I wouldn't say a Tyreek-esque kind of deal, but a first-round pick, maybe a first and a third or something like that for his services, and take that rather than trying to explore a trade for guys like Debo Samuel and someone else.
Yeah, this isn't the only disgruntled story coming out of San Francisco. They had that lineman started blaming people on social media. The 49ers organization is not handling this loss well. And I don't know, it's probably not expected to handle it well after, you know, you were up by 10 again against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs and you lose the way you do in overtime. You got people complaining about not knowing the rules in overtime. This just looks like a mess right now from the outside. And if you're the Falcons or any team for that matter, you know, when there's disarray, generally that's a time where you take advantage. And if they do make Ayuk available, I mean, you just found your wide receiver two, or, you know, really a wide receiver one with a wide receiver 1A, Drake London, wide receiver B, Brandon Ayuk. And you're paying Drake London rookie money while you're paying Ayuk, you know, top of the market money. So it makes a lot of sense for somebody like the Falcons. And obviously the fit is seamless because, you know, we've talked about it at length that Zach Robinson kind of hails from the McVay Shanahan offense. And we just saw what Ayuk did, you know, nearly 1,400 yards, averaging over 18 yards a catch. I mean, the guy's a big play waiting to happen. So I think, you know, on paper, the fit is seamless. Whether they actually trade him or not, or his family's just talking, I have no idea. Ayuk obviously probably prefers to be in San Francisco, but with any of these guys, I mean, and with me, with everybody in life, you need to get your money, get your bag. I don't care how good your work is or that your workplace is, go get your money. And I feel like Ayuk's going to do that. Whoever's going to pay him, that's who he's going to play for.
I don't think there's any doubt that there is trouble in paradise. The 49ers are kind of like a soap opera, but at the same time, this isn't anything new. They had a lot of these same things coming out with the way that they lost last year. And it seems like every year this happens because they lose in heartbreaking fashion. They get so close. So not a lot of people are going to handle four straight trips to the NFC championships with no Super Bowls to show for it very well. So I'm not necessarily surprised. It's still fresh. So you're going to get a lot of comments like these, especially from guys that feel like they could have done more to help you win a championship when they were an all-pro wide receiver. And Brandon Ayuk, personally, if I'm the 49ers, I'm doing everything I can to get Debo out of San Francisco. But that could be a lot easier said than done. Listen, Debo's a very good player. He's had some injury concerns. He was injured multiple times throughout the playoffs. He's been injured multiple times throughout his career. He's going to be 29 and owe $30 million. Oh, and by the way, he's not the type of guy, he has 2 years left on his contract, that is going to be sitting there saying, oh, I don't want to get paid again. He's going to be looking for that next thing. So I don't think there's going to be a ton of suitors out there for Debo Samuel. There will be a ton of suitors out there for Brandon Ayuk. As I mentioned, it will take at least a first-round pick to get a guy like that out of San Francisco. But it's definitely something to monitor, because this is a team that's going to have to make moves, whether it's this offseason or next offseason or the offseason after that, especially when Purdy gets paid. They're not going to be able to pay all these guys. They're going to have to figure it out. And I think that figuring it out starts this offseason.
Yeah, well, I think the 49ers have shown an ability to adapt. I mean, they handed over several first-round picks for Trey Lance, and it seemingly hasn't affected them. Obviously, landing a seventh-round pick in Brock Purdy, kind of covers up that deficiency, that loss of draft picks. But they've handled it masterfully. John Lynch is one of the best GMs in the game, so I don't have a doubt that they'll figure it out. But there will be attrition on that roster. Make no mistake about it. You mentioned all the contracts that they have to pay, and that didn't even account for somebody like Trent Williams, Nick Bosa, Fred Warner. I mean, Dre Greenlaw. They have insane amounts. It's not only do they have elite players, they have that next tier of players that they are also paying not top of the market dollars to. The point is they're going to have
damn close.
They're going to have to make some changes. And if it is somebody like Ayuk getting the boot, the Falcons, I mean, when we were just talking about it, last segment, if you haven't seen it, go check it on the YouTube, Sports Talk ATL. The edge rusher market in terms of free agency is robust with options. High-end options, bargain options. The receiver market is not. The receiver market, you know, there's a couple of guys like T. Higgins. He's going to break somebody's bank. And if you can get a guy like Ayuk without, you know, competing with all these other teams in free agency and say, you know, you give up a second-round pick or maybe, I don't know, first-round pick seems like a lot. He is an all-pro guy, 1,400 yards.
He's getting a first-round pick.
Yeah. So, let's just say my trade. Second-round pick, and then you extend him immediately. That's something where you don't even have to test the free agent market. That's something that's got to be appealing, and it will be discussed in Flowery Branch. There's no doubt about that.
The 49ers currently have 10 guys on their roster making at least $14 million, and they have about 15 guys making at least $10 million. So that's the benefit of having a guy like Brock Purdy in there that's making basically league minimum or league minimum, but that is going to change, and they're going to have to make significant moves. And even guys that weren't making huge money last year, like go look at Debo Samuel, for example's contract. He was making like $9 million against the cap last year. It's 28.1 next year, so they're going to have to make some moves. And I think Brandon Ayuk is a guy definitely to watch. And I think more than anything, you talked about the fit, Zach Robinson. He's a perfect complement to Drake London. He puts this Falcon skill position in a group of their own. I mean, you talk about the 49ers skill group being in a group of their own. You do that in Atlanta, yours is now in a group of its own. But you got to have a quarterback or it does not matter.
I was just about to say, I don't think anybody would, you know, really not be talking about the Falcons skill group the way they are if it weren't for the quarterback position and Arthur Smith. Like, this skill position group can go toe-to-toe with anybody's, including the 49ers, if there's a productive offense with a quarterback who can get the ball to its playmakers. And if we find that this offseason, we're going to be talking about this group with or without Ayuk as one of the best in the NFL. There's no doubt about that.
Coming up after the break, the 33rd team QB power rankings. They are crazy. We are going to discuss it. The 33rd team just released their QB power rankings entering the offseason, and they had Desmond Ridder, who will be the focus of the first part, and we will do the rest of the list later. Desmond Ridder was 26th. Do you think that's a fair ranking? Too high, too low?
I don't think it's as egregious as some of the other ones, because as you said, we're going to get to it later. There are some terrible ones out there. But there's one name in particular that is right next to Desmond Ridder that absolutely blows my mind, and it's Deshaun Watson. Listen, guys, he didn't play his best this past year before the injury, and he didn't play his best last year, first year of his deal following his suspension. But make no bones about it, Desmond Ridder is not one ranking away from Deshaun Watson in any universe, galaxy ever. I mean, Desmond Ridder, for all of his faults, you know, he had, you know, he did do some good things. So I don't think that this ranking is too far off. He is obviously a bottom of the barrel starter and a high end backup. And there's a place for that kind of player in this league. It's just not in the range that these guys ranked him, which is right next to Deshaun Watson. Like, these two guys go out next year. Deshaun Watson could be in the conversation for the MVP, while Desmond Ridder is still going to be leading the league in red zone turnovers. Like, that's how different these guys are. And I know they're ranking it based on what we saw last year. But from what I saw last year, Desmond Ridder is a bottom three quarterback in the NFL. Like, it's that simple to me.
Yeah, I mean, he's
at least among the starters, among the 32.
He's no higher than 30. I think he's in the 30 to 40 range. I definitely think there's some backups. I mean, you could even make the argument that Taylor Heinicke is a better quarterback than Desmond Ridder.
I think a lot of people.
Jacoby Brissett. Argument. There's a lot of guys that are backing up. I mean, he has Bailey Zapp at 32. Mac Jones isn't even in the top 32. Listen, I'm telling you, I'm taking Mac Jones over Desmond Ridder. I mean, we've seen the guy make a Pro Bowl. I know the things haven't worked out. But listen, he didn't have the same situation that Atlanta had, where he had a good offensive line, good weapons, and an offensive play caller, not like Matt Patricia calling your plays along with Joe Judge as your quarterback's coach. So the situations aren't even similar. Deshaun Watson, obviously ridiculous, but this is just one of some of the most ridiculous things here, where they have Jalen Hurts ranked 17. Listen, we were both on the Jalen Hurts is probably not a top five quarterback after his tremendous season last year, but don't tell me he's the 17th best quarterback. Brock Purdy,
same exact argument.
Brock Purdy, 18. 18. And then let me read you some of these names. Geno Smith at 12. Geno Smith? Are we joking? Like, what are we doing here? He had one decent year, and yes, he earned that contract. I think that's a contract that Seattle's sitting there regretting. If he was the 12th best quarterback in the league, they would not be regretting that contract. I agree with some of these. I mean, Aaron Rodgers at 15.
Anthony Richardson is at 16. Anthony Richardson is ahead of Jalen Hurts, Brock Purdy, Tua Tagovailoa, Baker Mayfield. Are you joking? Are we joking? That is absolutely Anthony Rich. Nobody was higher coming out of Florida on Anthony Richardson than Chase was. But he can admit the fact that, like, he played, what,
five games?
Like, what are we talking about? And he didn't play them. Like, he wasn't, like, at the forefront of the MVP conversation when he went down with that season-ending injury. Like, he was just playing all right. People were like, okay, you know, he starts to clean some things up. This guy can be something. This is an absolutely atrocious list. I would even go a step further. I would go a step further and ranking. Let's just go to the top. They got Mahomes at number one, no arguments. Lamar Jackson, two, no arguments. Josh Allen, three, no arguments. You got Justin Herbert, Matthew Stafford, Dak Prescott, C.J. Stroud, Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow. I know he was hurt this year, Joe Burrow, that is, but ranking C.J. Stroud, Matt Stafford, and Dak Prescott ahead of Joe Burrow,
Trevor Lawrence,
should revoke your ability to put stuff out like this on such a major platform. I mean, that's you egregious.
Trevor Lawrence, too. I mean, Trevor Lawrence, we're sitting here talking about if he's the guy. Like, listen, everyone liked Trevor Lawrence coming out of college. He's one of the most highly touted prospects. But I think that's so interesting about this list is it seems like he's going based off maybe just strictly attributes. Like, Justin Herbert has this huge arm despite not really doing anything with it to this point in his career. Trevor Lawrence has all the attributes to be a top 10 quarterback, but he has never played like a top 10 quarterback over a full season in his career. I love C.J. Stroud. I actually am higher on Dak Prescott than most, but I'm not putting those guys ahead of Joe Burrow, who has been to a Super Bowl in his two healthy years, went to a Super Bowl and then went toe-to-toe on the road with Patrick Mahomes. He's the only quarterback in the league to beat Patrick Mahomes. And if you're going to give Patrick Mahomes the GOAT, if you're going to call him the GOAT because of what he's able to do in the playoffs, then you have to do the same thing with Joe Burrow, because he's the only guy right now in the league that can say he went toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes, not once, but twice. Beat him both times on the road. He's 3-1 against Mahomes. It's the one. I mean, and listen,
Trevor Lawrence has just not lived up to the billing of being the number one overall pick, a generational prospect. I'm looking at multiple guys. Kirk Cousins, before he went down with an injury. If you want to talk about Anthony Richardson and what he showed in a small sample size, that, you know, I'll leave that be. Kirk Cousins being 13th and Trevor Lawrence being 8th, that's absolutely – Kirk Cousins was firmly a top 10 quarterback before he went down with an injury. And another guy who didn't get injured is Jared Goff. Jared Goff was firmly a top 10 quarterback. At least, let's just say he's 10. He was at least better than Trevor Lawrence. I mean, you want to talk about – I mean, Trevor Lawrence is still skating by in these rankings – on him coming out of Clemson and coming out of high school and never losing a game in high school or whatever that crazy stat is. Like, is anybody watching football anymore? Like, Trevor Lawrence is firmly in the 12 to 16 range of quarterbacks. That's not to say he can't make that leap, but like, based on what
we're all waiting. I think we're all waiting.
Everybody is still waiting.
We've been waiting on him to make that leap, and he hasn't even come close to living up to the billing of who he was, which is this Andrew Luck-esque prospect. But yeah, this list is interesting. I don't know. I wish I could talk to him and ask him what exactly the requirements are, how he built this list.
He was mixing and matching. Because he was like taking past accomplishments, future projections. Aaron Rodgers didn't play a snap. Let's just stick him in the middle, because if he comes back and he's healthy, then, you know, maybe he'll be all right. Like, it looks like he was picking and choosing. He was like, past accomplishments, what do you do in 2023? And also maybe what can he do in 2024? And it's crap. It's what it is.
We got to go to break. But Justin Fields, the odds on his next team have shifted dramatically away from the Atlanta Falcons. For about a year now, Justin Fields has been connected to the Atlanta Falcons. And when the initial odds from DraftKings opened up on his next team, he was the favorite outside of the Chicago Bears, which I thought was very shocking. They had the Chicago Bears at even money, but right behind him were the Atlanta Falcons at plus 140. Those have now dramatically shifted in favor of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, is that necessarily surprising? When you talk about why the Falcons were linked so heavily to Justin Fields, it's a lot to do with the fact that Arthur Smith kind of prefers that mobile quarterback and it fits his offense. And when you think about the fit in Pittsburgh, it's kind of seamless. They want to run the ball and lean on that defense. Justin Fields, his best attribute is his legs. I think it would work well with Arthur Smith. I've heard from several reliable sources, not my sources, but just like reliable media members in the NFL, that Mike Tomlin really has a fondness for him. So it makes a lot of sense. So those odds have now shifted to minus 125 in favor of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Meanwhile, the Falcons have gone from plus 140 all the way down to plus 550. So not just are the Steelers extremely interested, but it appears that people are starting to get the feeling that are in the know in these kind of things that the Falcons may not be the perfect fit for the hometown kid.
And this isn't something new. You know, we've talked about it at length, that, you know, the whole Justin Fields, I've kind of cooled off on the idea. And the primary reason for that is, as Chase kind of alluded to, that Zach Robinson's offense, which is Falcons offensive coordinator, is not really — could he tailor his offense to Justin Fields? Probably. But if you want, you know, the most efficient, the most effective Zach version of Zach Robinson's offense, you're going to need somebody like the Shanahan McVay quarterback tree, where it's Jared Goff, Matt Ryan, Brock Purdy, Jimmy G. It's these guys that can play within a system, whereas Justin Fields, his best ability is probably playing outside the system and kind of, you know, playing on his own, playing like that backyard football style. And I think that matches up with what Arthur Smith wants to do more so. There's more zone reads and something like that, where, you know, Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, they expect a quarterback to kind of, you know, play with anticipation, accuracy, but most of all, play within the system and, you know, take what the defense gives you. And asking Justin Fields to do that is a disservice to him. He's the second best running quarterback in the NFL. He's incredibly dynamic. And to ask him to just sit in the pocket would be asking to take his best ability away from him. So I think that the whole, you know, dream that a lot of Falcons fans who, you know, grew up watching Justin Fields, Georgia native, of him coming back home and leading the Falcons, I think that you should probably wrap your head around that. It's not likely. In fact, I would give you five other choices, not preferable choices, but more likely, you know, options for the Falcons than Justin Fields.
Yeah, Justin Fields is exciting, man.
Imagining
him in this offense, and I do believe there are offenses where he can have success, and I think there's a situation in Pittsburgh where I just think he could have a lot of success because he has a guy in Arthur Smith that's going to accentuate his strengths, and beyond that, he has a defense that he can rely on, and he's not going to be asked to make these ridiculous. They're really going to be like, hey, Justin, what do you do best? You throw the ball deep and you run the ball best. That's what he does best. That's not exactly. I mean, just go watch the Super Bowl. Like, how often was Brock Purdy sitting there throwing 50-yard bombs? No, everything was on time. I mean, even if you watch clips of Kyle Shanahan, because they do the whole mic'd up thing, he's basically calling out the receivers. And that's how these offenses run. It's like, okay, he sees a look, bang, this is Christian McCaffrey. You got one-on-one coverage. Right. There's no like, oh, pull it down and run and stuff like that.
Improvisation in these offenses is very minimal compared to the Andy Reid style West Coast offenses or Arthur Smith's offense. You know, the improvisation within, look around the league. Matt LaFleur, Mike McDaniel, Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, they all play on time in rhythm, and they take what the defense gives them. And yes, Justin Fields probably could do that, but you're asking him, like, you're asking Lamar Jackson, you're keeping a Ferrari in the garage when you shouldn't be. You should be letting the baby loose. So I think, you know, to Chase's point, that the fit with the Steelers is much more plausible than it is with the Falcons.
Yeah. I mean, if I was a betting man, I would go ahead and put my money on him joining the Pittsburgh Steelers. I just think it is a very, very
good fit. And Shepard came out and said that Mike Tomlin's a big fan.
Yeah. And obviously, we don't have to say that matters a ton. Coming up after the break, should Falcons fans still hold a grudge against Kyle Shanahan? Kyle Shanahan is best known around Atlanta for leading the biggest collapse in Super Bowl history. If he just runs the ball on probably 30 different occasions, the Falcons are sitting here 2017 Super Bowl champions. Obviously, we know what happened. And as the 49ers fell in the Super Bowl for the second time, the third time in Shanahan's career, Falcons fans took to all forms of social media to bag on their former offensive coordinator. And I get it to a degree. But there's just never been a point in me where I'm just like, I don't want this guy to win. Like, to me, I think Kyle Shanahan is the best coach in football. I know people are going to say Andy Reid, but I said, hey, give Kyle Shanahan Patrick Mahomes and see what the results are. And to me, I think he's the best coach in football. I think the biggest reason the Falcons were in the position that they were in is because Kyle Shanahan was calling those plays. So as much as I give him grief and I'm still pissed off at those decisions he made, nobody is hurting worse about that than Kyle Shanahan himself. I feel like people think that Kyle Shanahan intentionally blew the game or something. And I'm just like, I get it. Like, I understand still being pissed, but 7-8 years later, I'm just kind of like, it just doesn't really bother me. Like, I literally never go into the game, any game that the 49ers play, and I'm like, oh, dude, I hate Kyle Shanahan. I want him to lose.
Misery loves company.
That's fact.
And, you know, Falcons fans are as miserable as any fan base across the major four sports. The 28-3 is iconic. In Atlanta, it's demonic. I mean, it's hell. Everybody hates it. The reference, it's over. It is overplayed, by the way. But, you know, you can't really blame Falcons fans. I'll never be that guy to tell you how to be a fan, because I'm a psychotic fan. I get it all the time. You know, why are you getting this upset? I get it. So I'll never tell you how to feel. I'll give you my opinion that I do think it's a little ridiculous that you're actively rooting for this guy to fail and be miserable. Like Chase said, he wanted to win that game just as bad as any Falcons fan. Like, I promise he wanted to win that game. It didn't go, you know, the Falcons way per se. And he has to live with that. I mean, I'm sure it keeps him up at night. I mean, these past three Super Bowls that he has blown a total of 48 points in three different Super Bowls certainly keeps him up at night. You would be a fool to think otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, see, this is the kind of misery loves company that I am. And this is probably going to be, I don't know if anyone can relate to this out there. So, you know, leave a comment if you do. I'm the kind of guy that was actively cheering against the Detroit Lions because I don't want another, I don't want another team that has sucked for as long as the Detroit Lions and never won a Super Bowl. Like, if the Browns were in the AFC Championship, I'm actively cheering against them. I'd rather the Chiefs, who have already experienced all this joy. Like, what really is a fourth Super Bowl for that fan base? Like, it's like, you know, it's, you can sit there and brag and it's whatever, but it's like that first, you'll never get over your first time. It's like your first high. Yeah. It's like your first high. It's like a heroin addiction. Yeah. And you'll never get that same high that you get from your first championship. I can tell you that from experience, winning with LSU and then winning with the Braves. Yes, the Braves was fantastic. The only reason they were kind of similar is because one's Atlanta and the other is your college team. Yeah. But you'll never get that first high. So what's a fourth championship for the Chiefs? I don't want a team like the Lions or the Cardinals or the Browns who have sucked way worse than the Falcons have my entire lifetime, but we both have zero Super Bowls. I don't want them winning first. That's the kind of misery loves company that I'm in.
The older I've gotten, the more mature I've gotten with my sports fandom, where, like, you know, I go back to the Nick Saban retiring, LSU fan. I went to LSU, but I grew up in Georgia as a Georgia fan. Nick Saban's been terrorizing me my whole life. Nobody has caused me more pain in terms of college football than Nick Saban. I was still sad to see him go, because the fact of the matter is that kind of figure is good for football, good for college football, good for sports in general. I'm glad he's sticking around, by the way. So I don't see the hate that a lot of people still live with the Kyle Shanahan stuff. But if you do, you know, more power to you. Hate can get you a lot further than joy. I'm a firm believer in that. So, hey, maybe it'll drive you to be great in something else in your life.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you got to hate something. You got to pick something to hate. I'm with you on the Nick Saban thing. I didn't
want him to go.
That Alabama game for LSU was always the hardest game of the season. Yeah. It was the best game of the season. It's the one that I looked forward to. And I think always climbing that mountain and conquering that beast is a way better feeling than if we beat Alabama next year. I don't think it's going to be nearly the same kind of feeling. Now, it's going to be great. Don't get me wrong. It's going to be great. I'm still going to love it. I'm still going to rub it in those Bammers face, but I don't think it's the same feeling as conquering Nick Saban. Yeah. Coming up after the break, which matchup for week one, the opening day of the season, will be the best featuring the Kansas City Chiefs? The Kansas City Chiefs are going to kick off the 2024 NFL season for what, the third time in the last 4 years. That's what you get when you're Super Bowl champions. It's going to start at Arrowhead, one of the most iconic stadiums in the NFL, and there are a ton of good matchups. The one that I'm looking at that makes a lot of sense to me is Joe Burrow. Those two have not kicked off an NFL season yet. They've had the opportunity to. Hasn't happened, and I think you're going to hear a lot this offseason about Joe Burrow. One, he's coming off injury, but a lot about him. He's the one guy that can challenge Patrick Mahomes. What better way than to put that to the test, putting him back at Arrowhead, a place that Joe Burrow has had some success, 2-1 at Arrowhead over his career. I think that's by far the most intriguing matchup. Now, they don't always go with the most intriguing matchup. I mean, Kansas City Chiefs, Detroit Lions last year, that turned out to be a fantastic matchup. We didn't expect it to be two of the four best teams in the NFL, but that's not always the direction they go for several reasons.
Yeah, and I think that the reason why the team I'm going to give could be, you know, the choice is, you know, in terms of headlines and trying to sell it, is Jim Harbaugh, Justin Herbert, let's get the NFL season with a bang. Both of the Harbaughs are in the NFL now. If you don't think they're one of the biggest draws, then you just don't know anything. You want to talk about underachieving Justin Herbert and the Chargers since he's been drafted. He's been firmly a top 10 quarterback, some seasons top five. And, you know, he finally got a coach that a lot of people we wanted in Atlanta as the Falcons head coach that think he's going to be immediately one of the best head coaches in the NFL. You want to talk about Andy Reid, Jim Harbaugh, Justin Herbert, Patrick Mahomes. That is a very intriguing matchup to me.
I actually think that could be the favorite to get it, because you also have the storyline of champion versus champion, the collegiate head coach and Jim Harbaugh and the champions of the Super Bowls. It's also a division rivalry. So there's a lot of intriguing storylines that make sense. A couple other ones that I'm sitting here, I feel like it's going to be one of these four. Obviously, you have the Baltimore Ravens AFC Championship rematch. They don't usually go back to those late playoff game rematches, but maybe they do there. I don't think anyone could complain. MVP Lamar Jackson, Super Bowl champion, best quarterback in the league, Patrick Mahomes, tons of storylines there. The other one to look out for, almost kind of like the Lions this past year, the Houston Texans, CJ Stroud, up and coming team. That would bring in, listen, it doesn't really matter. They're going to get the viewers. It doesn't really matter who they put. They could literally put the Atlanta Falcons on there for opening night and teams are going to tune in. But those are the four matchups I think that are the best. They make a lot of sense. But I agree with you. I'm going to go with the best one that I like the most for storyline purposes is the Los Angeles Chargers, because Jim Harbaugh is must-watch television. Yeah. Champion versus champion at the two highest levels. Justin Herbert, obviously one of the best quarterbacks in the league. So you're not, and the Chargers and Chiefs usually give you a pretty damn good game.
Yeah, high-scoring affairs are always going to be good TV, and that's kind of what we're looking at with those two quarterbacks, at least what you think. And I do think the Lamar Jackson AFC Championship rematch is a possibility. It's certainly going to be one of those four, as you mentioned, Bengals, Chargers, Ravens, Texans. But I do think I was thinking about it. I mean, the whole idea of putting the offensive rookie of the year right next to the Super Bowl MVP and Patrick Mahomes being like, this is the, you know, who's going to challenge him next. I do think that is an attractive choice as well. D'Amico Ryan's coach of the year. So I think that there's a lot to love in that matchup as well.
Yeah, I mean, as we said, it's not going to hurt ratings whichever way they go. People are going to tune in to watch Patrick Mahomes and especially Travis Kelce if he's still dating Taylor Swift. I'm sure that'll be a narrative that comes back. We get a break. But at week one, I'm not so sure about it. That wraps up our show for this evening. Thank you guys for joining us. We will be back with you tomorrow.